thanks to our speakers, not only for sticking to the time allocated to them, but also for offering so many thought-provoking insights, and also for already reacting to one another's paper. And I hope you've appreciated that already many bridges have been made between the papers, and I want to thank our speakers for that. I'm now in the privileged position of giving myself the floor for a first round of comments, and I want to thank Professor Besson for giving me this role. Before I elaborate on a few observations, let me make two caveats. I will not comment on each paper one after the other. More modestly, I'll make four overarching comments, and my comments are more about the common denominators between the four rich presentations we've heard. So four overarching remarks rather than individual comments. That's my first caveat. The second is that this is an introductory panel on notions and concept, so you will certainly allow me to theorize matters a bit further. I think all our panelists have been actually already very theoretical, including Professor Pellet, who doesn't like being called a theorist, but I think we've heard four wonderful theorists this morning, and I will just take my cue from them. So four remarks. First remark, I feel that when it comes to consent, our speakers this morning are all what I would call post-voluntarist and post-foundationalist. What do I mean? I think the idea of state consent as the foundation of international law has been repudiated by most of our speakers. I think most papers and most presentations debunk the common foundational narratives about consent and the foundations of international law. I think for our speakers, consent cannot be the foundation of international law, let alone of international obligations or of international legality. This was very clear in Professor Pellet's presentation. I think this is a point which Christian Tams makes indirectly when he indicates that international dispute settlement may be one of the very few areas where the question of consent remains relevant. She didn't mention it explicitly, but from her own scholarship, I appreciate that Professor Bröllmann has also been quite critical about the role of consent as the foundation of international law. And this was also very clear in Professor Lefkowitz when it comes to the basis for legitimacy. Consent cannot be the basis for the legitimacy of international law. So this simplistic narrative, which we've heard for a very long time, doesn't do the trick anymore. Consent cannot provide international law with foundations. Obviously, this has a lot of implications. It's not only consent that is useless in foundational terms, it's also Westphalia, it's the idea of original consent, it's all the analogies with the social contract. All this goes to the trash can. Well, personally, I think it's a very good thing. On the contrary, I think this trashing of consent as the foundation of international law comes a bit belatedly. I've always thought that there were many, many reasons for rejecting the idea that consent is the foundation of international law. I mean, just for instance, when you say that consent is the foundation of international law, well, I see no difference with saying that natural law or God's will is the foundation of international law. I think there is no difference, in my view, between voluntarism and natural law in foundational term. There are other reasons why it doesn't make sense to have consent as the foundation of international law, one being that international law must precede the original consent to it. Consent to international law can never be thought outside international law. And so international law always begins before the consent that validates it. So for all these reasons, I think our panelists were quite right in debunking and repudiating the idea of consent as the foundation of international law. This was my first observation. Second observation, so our speakers are, as I call, post-voluntarists and post-foundationalists, but they are not yet what we call, or what I would call, post-anthropomorphists. And this is my second remark. The notion of anthropomorphism has been mentioned already many times. It was mentioned by Professor Besson in her opening remarks. And I want to commend Professor Breulemann for really tackling the question of anthropomorphism in both in her paper and in her presentation. I think this is, it sounds very arcane, but I believe this is no minor question for a colloquium dedicated to consent. I think the very idea of consent, consent by states, consent by international organizations, presupposes the attribution of an intellect, of a human mind, of a human will, of a human conscience, of an animus to state and international organization. I mean, this is really crude anthropomorphism, like the one you find in Suarez, in Hobbes, in Wolff, in Pufendorf, Vattel, and so on. I think Professor Breulemann rightly pointed out that this is a very slippery construction, a construction which may not be fully embraced when it comes to international organizations, as she said. She nonetheless acknowledges that the construction, the idea of the state having an intellect, has survived and has been surprisingly perpetuated over centuries. And I think she's right to be a bit bewildered. Anthropomorphism lives on. It doesn't seem to be a problem for most of us. Why is it so? Why do we still, as we discuss consent in this wonderful place today, why do we still embrace and live up to this idea of the state as having an intellect? And why is this idea so resilient? Well, that would be probably the topic for another conference, maybe next year. But let me just mention two reasons, just because I think we cannot turn a blind eye on that question. I think one reason is a very simple reason. We love states, we love internationalizations, and we want them to be like us. We want states and IOs to have an intellect, to have dreams, to want something, to have desires and anxieties. I think it's as simple as that. I think the idea of anthropomorphism and all this idea that the state has an intellectual in an intellect and can consent and consciously consent, I think it also comes from fear. Because if we get rid of consent, because it's an anthropomorphist construction, then we also get rid of opinio iuris, which is, according to Professor Pellet, what makes law law. But then we also get rid of jus cogens, then we also get rid of pacta sunt servanda, and then we get rid of all kinds of constructions that populate our discourse. And if we start getting rid of consent, opinio iuris, jus cogens, pacta sunt servanda, we may go into trouble, and our house of cards may start to crumble. So that might be a bit cynical. I think the notion has been resilient because we feel we're better off with these, albeit weak, anthropomorphic constructions. This was my second remark, acknowledging the debate that was put on the table by Professor Besson and Professor Breulemann. Third observation, and possibly most importantly, in their own way, the four speakers have adopted a very binary narrative about consent. I think they all embrace a very dualistic type of thinking. I think the four presentations we've heard are very binary. For instance, Professor Pellet distinguishes between the will and the consent. Professor Breulemann distinguishes between the intentional state and the symbolic conduct. Professor Tam distinguishes between the principal consent given to international dispute settlement mechanism and the particular consent that is being controlled and interpreted by court. Likewise, Professor Lefkowitz distinguishes between two distinct concepts of consent. It's very clear in his paper. There is a narrower normative concept and a broader descriptive one. So these are all very binary arguments. I want to push that further. And at the cost of indulging a little bit into a caricature, I think most of our speakers distinguish between consent as an expression, as an act of consenting, and consent as the object of what is being consented to. So in other words, I think all of them, in a way or another, distinguish between a descriptive notion of consent and a normative one. And if I want to push the caricature a bit further, I would say that all our speakers this morning distinguish between consent as a form and consent as content, as substance. So there is the formalistic take of consent, and there is a substantive one. Consent as a form on the one hand, consent as content or substance on the other. And I think Professor Breuelmann, once again, was extremely explicit about this, referring to the traditional structuralist dichotomy between signified and signifier, which is synonymous with content versus form. And I think this is a dichotomy, this is a distinction that, in a way or another, has informed most presentations this morning. And I suspect this is a distinction that will continue to inform many of the papers that will be presented today and tomorrow. Obviously, this binary mode of thinking is no surprise. After all, international lawyers are all children of the Enlightenment, and they cannot think but in binary terms. And I think this, it's no surprise that this distinction between consent as the expression of consent and consent as object, as what is being consented to, reflects the old modern distinction between consent as form, between form and substance, between form and content. And I think this is really a key distinction. Consent as form, consent as content. This is not the end of the story. I mean, they all postulate that distinction, but they also puts forward a hierarchy between them, between these two types of consent. I think each speaker attributes a very specific role to each of these two, consent as form, consent as content. And I think they all go into the same direction. The serious stuff here is consent as content. It's the substantive dimension of content of consent that matters. The act of consenting, the expression of the consent, the form, is secondary. So said differently, in all these presentations and paper, the crux of the matter is substantive consent, is consent as content, less so the form of consent. Consent as a form is of a secondary importance. That doesn't mean that they overlook completely consent as a form, and they claim that consent as a form is irrelevant. It's simply that consent as a form is always secondary to consent as content. So the form is always secondary to the substance. It's at the service of the substance, in the sense that consent as a form is always there to signify, to return to the structuralist vocabulary, consent as content. So the form is always at the service of the content. And it is consent as content that will help us determine the competence of a tribunal, the power of an IO, the substance of an international obligation, and the legitimacy of international law. What matters is substantive consent, the substance, the content of consent. It's all a matter of content and not of form. So what is sacred here is consent as content. So there is a hierarchy put by our speakers between the various understandings of consent. This was my third remark, which was descriptive, which is my reading of their presentation, and which is probably also my over-reading of their presentation. Which brings me to my fourth and last observation, which comes in the form of a disagreement. What do I think of all this? What do I make of our speakers distinguishing between consent as form and consent as content? Well, obviously, our lovely host, Professor Besson, didn't put me in this position to vindicate and corroborate all what our distinguished speakers wrote and said, and I'm not here to say that everything is compelling and wonderful. So I want to take issue with these binary narratives that inform all discussions on consent so far, and I cannot help taking a hammer here. Well, what's my objection? And this is where I turn a bit theoretical, but I had warned you. Well, I think that this distinction between consent as a form and consent as content, consent as expression of consent and consent as what has been consented to, I think this distinction, like most dichotomies of international lawyers, it cannot be upheld. I do not actually, more precisely, I do not think that there can ever be something like consent as content. Consent as content, so consent as substance, in my view, is nowhere to be found. Consent, in my view, can only be a form. Consent is a form. It's a text. It's a couple of words. And just like all forms, I don't think it has any content. I think what forms do is to refer to other forms. So consent is a text, is a word that refers to other words, which in turn refers to other words and refer to other words and so on and so on. And so there you have this eternal deferral from one form to the other, and hence there's no content. So for that reason, I think consent as content will never be found. What we have is just text referring to text, referring to text, and referring to other text. And that's why I'm claiming that the crux of the matter is not consent as content, but consent as a form. What matter is the form, not the content, because the content will be nowhere to be found. And this has obviously important implications, and I do appreciate that this may all sound very unorthodox, but this has very important implication, one of which being that I think it makes no sense to look for the content of consent, other than for ritual reasons in the courtroom. But it makes no sense simply because there's no content. The content is nowhere to be found. For the same reason, I think we shouldn't approach consent in an hermeneutic fashion. I think it's not about interpreting consent. We ought not to hunt for content, because again, there is no content in consent. And lastly, an implication is that consent never raises a question of determinacy or indeterminacy. I think indeterminacy and determinacy is an irrelevant question in our debate. Well, and I'm going to finish here. Interestingly and possibly ironically, I think that our distinguished speakers are not or will not be entirely adverse to my skepticism towards the possibility of consent as content. For instance, I know that Professor Brühlmann laments the disaggregation of the two sides of consent. Professor Tams himself sounds a bit wary when he discusses the extent of control of international courts and tribunals on the content of consent and the resistance of states. Professor Pelle bemoans that scholars and judges constantly conflate consent and will. And the same goes with Professor Lefkowitz, who tells us that consent is a contradictory a notion, that it has sides that collides with one another. So they all seem to acknowledge, in a way or another, that there is something wrong in the distinction between consent as content and consent as form, and especially that there is something wrong with consent as content, as substance. Let me conclude these rather quick remarks. So when it comes to the idea of consent in international law, we, and I include myself in the we international lawyers are surely post-voluntarist, post-foundationalist. I think there's very little debate there. We are possibly, listening to Professor Brühlmann, we are growingly turning into post-anthropomorphists, taking a hard look at this anthropomorphic construction, or at least we dream that someday we will get rid of that. But we all have yet to accept that we may be post-voluntarist, we may be post-foundationalist, we may be someday post-anthropomorphist, but we are all formalist. Consent is just a form, and hence, formalism is our fate. Thank you.